Good evening. I'm Jim Zirin, and you are watching The Digital Age. Tonight, we have a terrific show for you about the dark side of the Internet, sexting. Sexting is the transmission of sexually explicit or intimate material from one cell phone to another, or posting such material on the Internet. With us tonight is an author and writer, Nina Burley, who's written a sensational new article for Rolling Stone magazine entitled Sexting, Shame, and Suicide, in which she's done considerable research into this area, particularly the dangers of sexting as they may affect young women and even young men who are so rash as to engage in this practice. Nina, we're delighted to have you back with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Now, why do people do it? I mean,
sexual
activity is something that we think of as people doing in private. Why do they go public with it on the Internet?
Well, I mean, I think initially these things are private. I think, people will send this material to a lover and assume that it's going to just be a private interaction.
Then they break up, and the,
and they
the
break up, and then you get revenge porn and things like that. Or in the case of these teenagers, where the boundaries are really not, well, I mean, adults have boundary issues too. But I mean, the problem really is with these kids that are starting in middle school. In the case of this story that I wrote, in middle school, the kids in seventh grade, the girls were already emailing pictures of themselves waist up naked to boys, to seventh grade boys who asked for the material. And then those pictures are out there in somebody else's phone forever, and that person can send them wherever they want. They post them on Facebook, they can send them out on Instagram. So the boundary between what's private and what's not private, as we know in the Internet age, and I'm sure you've talked about all the other aspects that of this, the boundary is disappearing like a sandbar.
You lose control
Hurricane
completely.
Sandy. I mean, there is no longer a boundary. There is no. You lose control of images. You lose control of your public persona. If you're a private person, and you know, the laws have not caught up. The social mores have not caught up, and the laws have not caught up to the reality that everything that you put out on a phone, your phone is your camera, and everything that you send out, everything that you put on that, is potentially a public material. And I think, in this case, this happened in California. This young girl was...
let's just pause for a moment before we get to that. I mean, there are a number of ways in which this can arise. There's the Anthony Weiner type situation where he committed political suicide, basically by doing it, where he was photographing himself. I think it's called in the jargon of sexting a selfie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Weiner did. Then there's the situation we just talked about where a spouse sends an intimate photograph to their spouse or a lover to a lover, and then they break up and the vindictive person puts it on a website or posts it to the social media. The third one is what you write about, and which you were about to describe in your marvelous article, and those are involuntary photographs that are taken when someone is under the influence or someone may be under duress or someone may be compelled. So why don't you tell us about this horrific case of Audrey Pott in California?
All right. Well, the Audrey Pott case is very similar to the Steubenville rape case and other cases that we are reading about around the country. Audrey Pott was 15-year-old, and the summer before, or the very beginning of her sophomore year, she went to a party at a house without parental supervision, and there were about 12 kids there, and they were drinking vodka, Gatorade cocktails, and shooting tequila and all sorts of things that high school kids get into when parents aren't around, and she passed out. and boys that she'd known since middle school carried her up to a bedroom, took off some of her clothes, started drawing on her with Sharpies, colored half her face, put arrows around her private parts, and you know, just basically wrote all sorts of obscene words on her body, and then apparently actually did some sexual acts with her, to her, and took pictures of her, and left. She woke up in the morning half naked, covered with ink, not remembering what had happened. And over the next few days, was recreated after she died, over the next few days, interacted with people on Facebook and with cell phones, texting, asking what happened to my body, why was I, and learned slowly what had happened, and that there were pictures of her out there. And so you can see in the Facebook messages her begging these boys, please delete them. I know you have a picture. And then the boys, and boys, not just the boys who were there, but other boys who had seen the material, joking with her about it. And anyway, through the last week of her life, she was, you know, shamed, slut-shamed, as they say, and publicly, you know, humiliated. And after a week of this, she went home, had her mother come pick her up from school. Parents didn't know what was wrong with her. She didn't tell them anything. People in the school knew, the students knew, and there's some question about how much the teachers may have heard it, but she went home and hung herself in the bathroom and died 2 days later, was taken off life
support. So the sexting is associated with her tragic suicide?
Yes.
Now, what kind of a place is the Saratoga High School in Silicon Valley in Northern California, which she attended? I mean, are these children of the underserved?
They are not, and it is not Steubenville. One of the reasons we selected this particular case, because there are many cases that we could have followed, which is one of the awful things about this. One of the reasons we selected this one is that Saratoga High School is right next door to Cupertino, where the Apple phone was invented and is being produced, and where the software, it is in the heart of Silicon Valley, where these programs are being created, like Instagram, like all of the social media, Facebook, Google's there. It's all right there, and the children of these people who are creating this stuff are at this. This is Saratoga High School. It's a very affluent high school. And this isn't to single out Saratoga High School, because it's happening in high schools all over the country, but there's something about the fact that it was right in the heart of the worldwide center of the tech industry, which has enabled this problem. So that's who. And she was in the midst of, you know, these children have bedrooms full of gadgets, right? It's not just one. The three boys who were involved and who were eventually arrested had, you know, the evidence list, the search warrant when it was for each of them when they were executed, 12 gadgets each, iPads, iPhones, outdated phones, computers. And all of this stuff was hauled in, and then, you know, forensics was done on it, and it took some time for the police to actually be able to piece together what had happened, because they delayed going in with the search warrant, and the boys had already started apparently to break the devices. So it took months for them to recreate what had happened and to confirm that there were these pictures and images. And of course, one of the reasons they can charge these kids is that in most states, transmission of images, you and I can sext pictures of ourselves and there's no law against it. But if you're underage, that is child porn. And if you're, even if you're a child,
age of 18.
Yes, even if you're a child, you're breaking that law if you're transmitting it. And if it's your own picture, I think you can be, well, I don't know if you can be arrested for child porn, but you can't disseminate pictures of underage children. The only state that has altered that is Vermont.
Can't disseminate them, yes.
Vermont made an exception for teenagers because of this issue, because so many kids are doing it. And what's happening, I know this happened here in New York at my son's school, there were one of these issues, and Skype pictures were disseminated. The Bronx DA came in and apparently investigated the parents who owned the computers for child porn.
Because it's possession of pornography.
Absolutely.
Child pornography.
Absolutely. So that's one thing, one way they went after these juveniles. And the other was eventually they charged them, apparently, with sex assault. These cases are entirely closed, so we have only got, you know, we've had conversations with people who've seen the records.
So these kids are masters of the digital age, and in some sense, they're victims of the digital age. So it's
yes. That's the irony of the whole thing.
And it's quite ironical. And also in the sex abuse cases, or even the child pornography cases, it's the memorialization of the event digitally.
Yes.
That
yes.
is evidence against the people that took the not only took the pictures, but the people who have the pictures.
Yes, and there are lots of issues that brings up. One of them is, of course, rape. Are the numbers higher than they used to be? Let's say you and I were in high school, or at least when I was in high school.
We didn't have a cell phone when you and I were in high school.
Exactly. So the numbers actually haven't. These rape groups, rape victim organizations say that the numbers actually aren't higher. What's happening is we have the evidence. And so the flip side of this being this awful thing happening is that these cases can now be prosecuted as they weren't being prosecuted before because girls were shamed, they wouldn't come forward. And in fact, in many of the cases now, the girls still don't come forward. And the victim advocates that I've talked to said there are many, many, many girls out there in high schools who similarly situated, didn't kill themselves, but who stop going to high school, who vanish, who don't graduate, who have to be coaxed back to school because they're so shamed by it because these images are out there. The flip side, of course, is the images enable the local prosecutors to take the cases, which they wouldn't have done, which they wouldn't have taken before. And you're seeing that all over the country now.
So these young kids may ruin their lives because
absolutely.
Of what was posted on the Internet.
Right. And so the other level of this is these are kids who have, you know, they're kids. They have impulse control issues that adolescents have. They are not of age and to be responsible, to be behaving responsibly. And they've taken these pictures and then they're simply, their lives are ruined. And what they're doing is they treat them as trophies of pranks. They don't understand where the boundary is between fun pranking and rape. That's not explained to them often in schools. Boys are not that's not explained to boys. It's not explained to girls. The boys in this case, I had parents say to me, it was a prank. It was like putting whipped cream on your sleeping at a slumber party, putting whipped cream on somebody's hand and taking a picture of it. It was funny, and these pictures then are trophies of a prank. What's the point of a prank if you can't share it with anybody, right? So that's kind of the way they're looking at it, the way to address it, I mean, if you want to get to that, is that the schools. It has to start obviously it has to start in the homes, but it really has to start in the schools, and they have to start talking about it at a very young age.
So what do you tell your kids? Do you take their cell phones away from them?
Oh, boy. Well, I have a 14-year-old and 11-year-old, and they knew that I was writing this story. I've been talking about it for several months, and, especially the 14-year-old.
Girl or boy?
Boy. I talk to him about it all the time. He is always on his phone. I talk to him about it all the time. We look at his phone. We monitor it. He doesn't like it. We say, we own your phone. It's, we aren't, we're not spying on you, but we need to see what's going on.
Just the way your employer may own your computer when you go in the workforce.
Am I big brother, big mother? Yes, but I think actually that you have to do that as a parent. It's not a joke because you have to know what they're doing, not just with the phones, but on the computer. You have to.
But you want him to have a cell phone. You want him to be able to call you if he gets into trouble.
Some people involved in this story, the private investigator, the lawyer who's representing the Pott family in a civil suit, because these boys will never be punished this case will go off their records at the age of 18. They're never going to be punished for it the way the Steubenville guys were because of the California law of juveniles. The lawyer for that family has said, we were just talking about it yesterday, maybe there ought to be an age limit for when you can have access to a phone. But I don't know if that's true because living here in New York, of course, we want our kids. There comes a point where you want your kid to have a phone. He's getting on the subway, the 14-year-old, and you want to know that he's okay. It enables a lot more interaction when they're far away. But on the other hand, in this case, what this case showed was, and what was going on in Saratoga, is that the parents were not monitoring their kids because they had the cell phone. So they would say, the text, "Mom, I'm going over to my friend's house. I'm sleeping over." And the parent would not pick up the phone or not go over to the house to see what was going on. So in this case, poor Sheila Pott, the mother of Audrey, took her kid to this, what she thought was a sleepover with her girlfriend. She dropped her off in the driveway. The kid whose house it was, the parents were away, and that daughter had said to her parents, "I'm sleeping over at Audrey's house." Typical teen ruse, right? Neither parent bothered to actually investigate what was going on. They didn't confirm, and I was told by parents in Saratoga that, it's not uncommon for parents just to drop kids off at the edge of a driveway and check in with them on the phones. And the phones, in a kind of a strange way, enable the parents to step back from their responsibilities of tracking what the kids are doing.
Was it the problem that Audrey didn't receive proper counseling and support after this ugly incident? I mean, she was a vulnerable girl anyway, wasn't she? She'd had problems with her stepmother.
She had mostly, I think, more she had body image problems.
Yeah.
And there was some bullying, supposedly, not confirmed.
Cyberbullying, which is another story.
And it's unclear what was going on with the bullying before this incident. But she was a girl who developed very early. She was like 11 or 12 and had, 34 double D breasts. She was, womanly at a very young age. And, of course, that things that go along with that are, you attract a lot of attention, and there are these young boys trying to figure everything out, and there's this girl, that looks like, a woman, and she had issues with that. It was hard for her. She had a lot of problems, or some problems, and she wasn't an emotionally disturbed young woman. She just had typical teen issues, and I think that, that problem also has to do with just the way, young women view their own bodies, the way boys view women's bodies and girls' bodies in an era of just hyper-sexualized imagery. And, Miley Cyrus's, and, I mean, I like Miley, but these images that are just so common, these kids that you can watch incredibly degrading porn on the internet with two clicks away from the word Britney Spears or, Taylor Swift. You can come upon incredibly degrading images of women.
But it's for parents,
this
really.
Wave,
it's
what
for
they parents. Call a cyber cesspool.
Yeah, but it's really for parents to regulate that, isn't it? I mean, are you critical of Audrey's mother for not providing counseling for her after this traumatic?
Well, the mother had no idea what had happened. Okay, so what happened was she sends her daughter to what she thinks is a sleepover. The next morning, Audrey's covered with ink. She gets up.
Graffitized.
Graffitized, good word. And she scrubs it off, and then she phones up her mom and says, "Come get me." And there was a little clue there to the mom in retrospect, because the mom thought she called her on an unusually early hour for a sleepover to be taken home. But the ink was all washed off. So she got home. She was quiet. She didn't eat lunch. Well, she was totally hungover. The parent didn't, Sheila didn't have any idea. She just noticed that she was quieter than usual. And then that night, she squirreled herself away in her bedroom and started this whole Facebook conversation, desperately trying to figure out what had happened and who knew what. And mom is in the kitchen. And I think, you know, do we as parents stand over our kids when they have Facebook and internet email contact with their friends all the time? By the time they're 15, I mean, I'm not monitoring my son's internet activities to that extent. So she knew that her daughter was not in a good mood, but this was a moody teenager already. So no, I don't fault, nobody faults Sheila Pott for what happened here. Nobody faults Larry, the father. There might be an argument to be made that there should have been maybe at the school some investigation, because this was going on and this girl was obviously troubled in school. She burst into tears in one of the classes. She showed up with cuts on her arm one day. Kids were gossiping about her. You know, and this was all going on in the school quad right in front of, you know, the school community, but we don't know what the school knew, and the school has utterly shut down because litigation. They wouldn't talk to me. They aren't even talking to the parents, not even to the parent community there, about what happened. So people are at a loss for what, you know, what to do. But to blame, so Nina, what to would blame
you,
adults.
What would you tell? Well, yes, but the responsibility has to lie with adults for teenage behavior, the behavior of their own children. And I mean, what measures would you advise parents, you're a parent, to employ to prevent this type of tragedy from occurring? I mean, would you take their, would you only give them cell phones that don't have cameras? Would you take away their Facebook account? Would you take away a Twitter account?
Well,
what would you do?
I mean, ideally, you know, I've got a beautiful 11-year-old girl who's about to be, or 10-year-old, who's just about to be a teenager. And, you know, in my fantasy world, I want to pluck her out of New York City and take her to a nunnery for the next 5 years and have absolutely no interaction with any kind of internet, cell phone, Twitter, anything, nothing, Instagram, nothing. And I actually have a friend who kind of has done that with a daughter.
Do you plan to tell her, or have you told her that the internet is dangerous? Really dangerous?
Barring doing that, you know, you have to tell them and tell them and tell them again. So my son comes home every other day. I'm lecturing him on these issues, and to the point where he just rolls his eyes and goes, "You're the parentoid." He thinks I'm just this paranoid person. But I think that you have to constantly talk to them. Now, beyond that, the parents, okay, then there are the schools. That's the next line of defense. And I think they should be talking about these issues in seventh grade. They should have, you know, in their health class or in their social studies class, where they should absolutely have a curriculum that addresses boundaries, sex boundaries for, you know, how girls are treated and how boys should look at girls, and the girls, you know, what is a degrading image, and then they should have discussions about
the
internet,
the dark side of the internet,
and they should warn them, and then they should be on the lookout for it in the school. They should maybe have somebody you know, in the schools who's deputized to monitor the children's Facebook, too. And, you know, because since this is all happening in the context of these school communities, they should probably be overseeing it. And then thirdly, law enforcement and laws. And there's stuff going on in California, and we can talk about that if you have time, about, you know, laws to erase.
We're rapidly running out of time, but do you think this is all a product? You've referred to the pop culture. We had a Super Bowl ad in 2010. Where Megan Fox said in a song, the popular song's Dirty Pictures, Dirty Picture to Me, Snap. Megan Fox said, "I wonder what would happen if I were to send this out," and she's in a bubble bath. And kids see this. What do they think?
It's everywhere, and, you know, on every level, music, television, sports. I mean, it's just, it is part of our culture. It's a hypersexualized culture and pop culture, and these kids are feeding on that. And absolutely, there's nothing that we can do about it. I don't think we can stop this, but I think you can talk to your kids about it. You have to talk to them, and you know, be vigilant and watch them. And it's
well,
not
clearly
fun.
We have to be vigilant. Clearly, we have to watch them, and clearly, we have to do more about it. So, Nina Burley, this has been just wonderful. Thank you so much for coming by.
You're welcome, Jim.
And thank you for coming by. And tune in next week for more on the digital age. Please visit our website at www.digitalage.org. For the digital age, I'm Jim Zirin. Good night and all the best.